Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia Stonic. You're closer than you think to a 202 Stonic with flexible finance plans from your local Kia dealer.
Joe at RTE.ie. As you know, Adrian Brady, Aaron Brady, who's 29 years of age, has been found guilty this morning of the capital murder of Detective Garda Adrian Donoghue. 41 Adrian was, a young man. The sentence is awaited in October, but he has been found guilty of murder. And then one of our team was looking at Twitter this morning and they saw a tweet by Stephen Breen, and most of it, especially when you hear him talking, recognise Stephen because he's the crime editor with the Irish Sun. He's been Crime Journalist of the Year for 2018. He's written a number of books, The Cartel and then The Bloody Career of Freddie Thompson. Highly regarded in as a crime journalist and appears on many radio stations and many radio programmes, including this one, invariably when there's a breaking story because he's usually on top of it. But Stephen tweeted a couple of days ago, August 11th, and we got a bit confused. We thought he was talking about someone else. And he tweeted, on this day in 2002, my dad Tom, who was 50, my dad Tom died after he was stabbed in an unprovoked attack in London. The person who did it was never caught, and I just hope no one in their family has ever had to lose someone through a violent action. I would not wish it on my worst enemy. Stephen Breen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Most people, when we saw this, people said, hang on, is Stephen talking about someone else? Because we've never heard this story. Well, what happened to your dad, Stephen?
Yeah. Well, Joe, I've only really mentioned this once before when I was publicising my book and John O'Rourke touched on it briefly. But just yesterday, it was the anniversary, so I thought about this, about, you know, I wanted to remember my father in some way. You know, we do it every year where my brother puts something up on social media as well. So I thought I would do something, but I just wanted to put a photograph up of him and, you know, just to send out this message that this is what happened to us and all those years ago. But just to let people know as well that, you know, I wasn't consumed by hate or anything. And I was thinking about this, that I think it was important to show that, you know, this happened to us, but I wouldn't wish this here happening to anyone. And throughout the course of my job, you know, doing something, my work, interviewing victims. But, you know, for me personally, for my father, I thought about that day 18 years ago when we get a call to the house to say your father has been stabbed. Now, he was in London for a few years. He was working there. My mother was going over there every month. He was coming home. And they were hoping to build a life in London, actually. So he was happy there. And then to get that phone call on a Saturday night that he's been stabbed, and then we're told that, oh, he's doing okay, and they're working on him at the moment. And then 2 hours later, we get a call to say from his friend that we had lost him and he passed away. Yeah. And it was just horrendous, because this is something you think doesn't happen to you. It won't happen to my family. It happens to someone else. And the whole world just ended then. And, you know, we had to go to London. I had to identify his body. The hardest thing I've ever had to do in my life, you know, when something like this happens, you're dealing with the state, you're dealing with authorities. You're not prepared for it. Like any death, when you lose a loved one suddenly, you're definitely not prepared for it. And then we had to wait 5 weeks on his remains coming home. So it was hard. But I just thought about the tweet yesterday, putting something out there. You know, it's taken a long time, but it's finally something now, I think, I can talk about.
And Stephen, did you find out, and your dad was a very young man, he was only 50, did you find out what happened to him?
Yes, Joe, at the time, he was working in London. He was out that Saturday night with a friend of his from Scotland, and when we were speaking to the police over there, he was just on a night out, and he was walking in the Camden Town area. There was some kind of altercation with two individuals, and during the course of that, I mean, I wished my father had walked away, but he wasn't the type to do that. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, there was some kind of incident. Words were exchanged. There was a bit of a scuffle, and during that, both my father and his friend, Brian, were stabbed, and my father was stabbed in the chest, Brian in the leg, and unfortunately, a few hours later, he lost his life. So, but it was being treated as completely random and unprovoked attack. And you know, this, you think in London is a huge city. Surely, you know, can this really be happening to my dad, despite the millions of people who live there? But unfortunately, it did.
And the police investigation.
Yeah, the police were very good. You know, they met with us. They came over to Ireland as well, and they had two suspects in mind. And they were two brothers. But the problem was the police couldn't really get one of them to obviously talk to about the other
one who
was involved in it. So they did surveillance on their property as well. They had secret recordings too. They told me all this. They were quite open, so they were. Mm. And they had a review of the case as well. A number of years later, they were in contact. You know, the late MP Eddie McGrady was very helpful towards us. Keir Starmer as well, very good too. But unfortunately, there was just no one came forward with any information. They did get a letter on one occasion. Someone had sent in a letter saying, regarding the murder of Tom Breen, this man did it. So they had a suspect, but they just didn't have the evidence.
Wow. And do you reckon your dad and his pal were just walking by? Do you reckon two other men, were they already in a row? And maybe did your dad say, "Ah, lads, don't be hitting each other," or whatever? Was it that type of scenario?
I think they just walked by them, and there was something said, some derogatory remark made to my father's friend, I believe, is what the police told us. And then as a result of that, words were exchanged, and then a few punches were thrown. And then during that scuffle, you know, with the two of them, that's when one of the guys,
my dad was
grappling with one of them, and that's when the knife came out and then stabbed them in the chest.
And what do you think of that killer now? Who's not caught?
Yeah, at the start, Joe, look, nothing's going to replace my father. That's a fact. And I think now we're 18 years on. Obviously, if that person had been convicted and gone to court, they probably would have been charged with manslaughter. They'd probably be out of prison by now. But I do think, I know John McAreevy was talking this week about Michaela.
Yeah,
you know, if you killed someone, you should be punished. And that was my belief at the start. But also at the start, I felt an intense hatred towards these individuals. And I think it was consuming me at the start. You know, it was all I was thinking about. And then I just had to get away from that there, because I knew that's not what my dad would have wanted for me to be like that, because it would just destroy you. And everyone's different. Everyone has their own views and their own ways of dealing with grief, and especially those who have lost loved ones through a violent action. So it's disappointing at the start, but what I do think, and what gives me comfort, is that these people had to live with this burden for so long. I don't know how they did it. I don't know how they go to sleep at night, knowing what they did, because we did I was on Crime Watch in the UK. I was also in the Camden New Journal, various local papers doing appeals.
Yeah.
And for me, but you still always have hope that someday someone might come forward and they will be punished. But I don't think about these people. I don't hate them. I feel sorry for them, for having that conscience where you kill someone, you take another man's life, and you have a ripple effect on other lives as well.
But you mentioned when you got the news, what was it, 18 years ago yesterday, you mentioned your brother, your mother, how is she?
Well, Joe, at the start, she was my priority, because we were standing in the hall of her family home in Downpatrick, County Down. And the phone call comes through to say that he's passed away. Like, this is my mother and father who had been together for 30 years.
Wow.
They'd lived through the troubles in the north. They'd buried many of their friends during the conflict in the north. And, they're looking forward to life. You know, my brother and I are both older, in our 20s. You know, we are leading our own lives. So they're looking forward to go to London. And just to see her crumble, like, she's a small woman, but to see her crumble and her future being robbed. But then, When I look at her now, she's a completely changed woman. You know, in fact, 5 years afterwards, she got her life back on track.
Okay.
She started going hill walking, and she remarried again years ago.
Right.
And she's very happy, and I think she deserves that.
Hear. And you say that all through the troubles, your dad was a Catholic and Lorraine, your mother, a Protestant. Mm-hmm. So a fair bit over the last few years, and that whole difficulty and families being terrorised and...
Yeah.
It's an awful situation. Stephen, when did you become a crime journalist?
Yeah, well, that happened, Joe. I was doing journalism, started in 1998, and then at the time of my father's murder, January 2009, I was working for the Belfast Telegraph's paper, the Sunday paper, The Sunday Life. So I was doing crime journalism then, and I was, had interviewed different families who'd been affected by violence. So I had started that process. And I suppose when this happened to me, then, I could relate to all other victims' families. Now, there are a lot of people worse off than I am. My God, there's some fantastic families I've met over the years, but I moved to Dublin in 2009. And when I moved to Dublin to work in 2009, I continued that trend of working with various families, just to give them a voice. And there are a lot of people out there, and I don't think society should forget about them. You know, people who've lost their loved ones. Like, I often think about, you know, Sandra Collins in Mayo. Her remains have never been found. Yeah, they disappeared. Lisa Dorian in the north, you know, and even, and this must be so heartbreaking for families. You know, I've got a grave to go to. You know, I can do that. Yeah, like, yeah. People like Trevor Daly's family, Deirdre Jacob, they can't do that. Yeah. And then you look at the Kinahan Hutch feud and the innocent people who lost their lives there. I mean, Trevor O'Neill shot dead in front of his kids, yeah. Martin O'Rourke. His kids will grow up without him. You know, I had 20-odd years with my father, but there are families there who don't have that, and I just feel so sorry for them. So I think it's important, and that's what we do. What we're doing now at the minute, even in the Irish Sun, we have a campaign to put pressure on the government to hold them to account, to remember families in relation to the parole bill. So about how this parole bill should be implemented straight away, because I interviewed a woman recently, Kathleen Chadha. I'm sure you know well, her two sons were murdered
by their father. Yeah, I'll never forget that day.
Oh, it's shocking. It's shocking. And she's a remarkable woman, a very strong, brave woman who is inspiring to so many families. Yeah. And it's an honour for me when I contact her, when I speak to Kathleen, to write about her stories. And like, I've had great support in the paper, you know, from this campaign, especially from our editor, Kieran McDade. It's just been incredible. But it's a privilege for me to write and to empathise with and to highlight what ordinary people are going through.
And then because I met him, and you've met many prisoners as well, Stephen, and ex-prisoners, but I met one of them in 2016 when I was talking about the previous book. I was going around the education centres and prisons talking about it. I met a chap called Brian Carney who murdered his wife.
That's right.
Siobhan. And then I read, I can't stand it up, obviously, we read this story over the weekend that he was... that he got a job as a counsellor, a listener. And I'm just saying to myself, I met this chap and I've worked with murderers in my previous life as a probation officer, but they're extraordinarily manipulative, and they will work to get early release, and they will work to get out early. But that's the difficulty so many people face. And Stephen, just finally, tell us about your dad, Tom.
Yeah, well, he was just a regular guy. He was someone who we looked up to. He was very funny, an intelligent man as well. He was someone who, like, we would go on holidays every year to Glenbeg, County Kerry, to the caravan, and that was during the Troubles. Him and I had we would go to the Celtic football matches together as well, and have other interests. So he's just someone who we idolised, really, and he left a huge void in our lives. But then he gave us hope, because I knew the way he would have been thinking, that you can't dwell on this, you have to look forward. Yeah. And indeed, even my son, Tom, we named him after him.
Yeah, oh, great.
So my dad's anniversary was normally a very difficult day, but my son, Tom, was born on my father's anniversary of his death. And so that's something that gives me hope to see him and to look forward. And then meeting my wife, Chrissy, in 2007 gave me hope as well, and just... it shone a light into our lives. It was light at the end of the tunnel, but I knew this was something that my dad would have wanted.
Okay. Well, that's an incredible story, Stephen, and condolences on the death of your dad at such a young age, any age, but such a young age. Stephen, what's happening in the Kinahan feud at the minute?
People are saying, I interviewed a former Assistant Commissioner, Pat Leahy, recently, Joe, and he was saying that he doesn't think this is going to go away. Thankfully, the Gardaí have done tremendous work. Yeah. A lot of senior players in these gangs are now before the courts. Okay. A lot of them are serving time for conspiracy to murder, for murder, but you always have to be on your guard. And obviously, there are still people out there being targeted, but because of the huge Gardaí response in the state, did a massive response, so they seem to be on top of it, so hopefully that continues.
Have you come across, we heard of this scam last week, we heard it from one of our people who were speaking to England about the Bank of Ireland scandal, but they were saying that bogus second-hand car dealers in the UK are now targeting the Republic of Ireland to scam money, and basically what they do is you somehow or other you give them half of the cost of the car, but you will never see the car, just to warn people to be on the lookout for that scam at the minute. Make sure before you buy a car, an import, you actually see the car, or you buy it through a reputable person who has references and has other customers that can be proved. Anyway, Stephen Breen, keep up the good work with
you,
the Irish Sun. But above all, condolences to you and your mother and your brother and extended family on the tragic death of your dad, Tom, on August the 11th, 2014.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.